All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Today is the Power Hour. We will do 1 or 2 hours, depends on you and the number of questions we've got. So questions are light right now. This is your chance. Jump in. Press 1 on your phone. If you do it right now, I promise we'll get to you. If you wait, maybe not. We're going to get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance. Engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, emissions, electrical, new technology, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. And I'm going to bring these guys in. Bruce, welcome.
Well, thank you, Kevin, for having us. As always, it's our pleasure
to have you here. John and Ethan checking in.
Hi, Kevin. Great to be here. Yep. Always great to be here, Kevin.
All right. Good to have you here again. We have somebody monitoring our phone systems today because we tend to have that Tuesday curse for some reason. So I've got somebody monitoring from our phone company monitoring the show today to see if we have any problems. And of course we won't, right? Isn't that how troubleshooting always goes?
Yeah. Oh, well, it is.
Yep. It won't act up when they bring it here.
That's right. So I'm sure that's what's going to happen today. We'll have a flawless day, so that'll be good. I've got just a couple things, and then we'll see what you guys have, and then we'll get to some phone calls. Did you guys see the autonomous test that Embark just finished?
I have not seen that one, no.
Embark is the company that's running, they're the same company that they've been running the appliances from like El Paso out to LA or somewhere in California for a couple months now with autonomous trucks.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
They just completed what they're calling the first coast-to-coast, L.A. to Jacksonville, with an autonomous truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
It was level 2 autonomy, so there was a driver in the seat the whole time. They did say the driver had to interact with the truck a couple times for a couple seconds, but for the most part, the truck did the run by itself. They did it in 5 days because the driver was still subject hours of service. So it was a 5-day run. They're going to be coming back soon, I think, doing it the other way. But their claim is that they are working towards level 4 autonomy, which would be no driver in the vehicle whatsoever. And they think they'll have it in, they said, a few years. They think it'll be a commercial product on the market. They're already working through regulations. Their model is almost going back to the kind of hub and spoke that we used to use with a lot of the LTL companies, and they still do, where their autonomous vehicles will move freight from hub to hub, and then local drivers will make the final delivery. So they're actually saying it will increase driving jobs, not decrease it, which is kind of interesting. And local jobs are in high demand. I mean, you very seldom see turnover in local jobs, and yet we have 100% turnover in over-the-road jobs. So, you know, the autonomous revolution for the first decade or so could actually improve things for drivers.
I read an article to that effect. I was doing some traveling this weekend, so I had some airplane time. There was a stat that the industry's due to, I believe, the number retire something like 70 or 80,000 people in the next year or two, just based on age.
It's huge.
Or higher than that.
Right.
I take that back. It was like 400,000, excuse me. It was higher than that. And with the demand for trucking right now, there's going to be a demand for 300,000 more over the next numerous years. So it's nearly a million drivers we're going to have. So the autonomous is almost going to be necessary to keep things moving, period. And the other jobs are just going to go up. So they think the total number of people driving trucks in the future, there's still going to be a demand, an increasing demand over the next 15 or 20 years, regardless of the, you know, how fast the autonomous thing comes on board. So it all balances out from the things I've been reading.
Yeah, and I think it's a positive because, again, you know, we're because of hours of service and ELDs and the driver shortage, I think we're going to have to find ways to move freight long distances without drivers because that's where all the big turnover is. It's the big truckload carriers that have all the turnover. Local driving jobs or even regional driving jobs, you hardly ever see turnover. And I think we're going to create a lot more of that. I think with autonomous and just shifting the supply chain the way things are looking, that we're going to see a lot more driving jobs that keep you closer to home, whether it's truly local in your home every night or even regional. You know, when I very seldom did really long over the road stuff. I did some of it in my career, but when I had my own authority, I just scheduled my freight. So I was home a couple times a week. You know, I would run fairly regional and get back through the house during the week once and be home on the weekends. And I was always shocked that the industry doesn't work harder to move towards that model more. And now I think they're going to be forced to. With the driver shortage and the ELD mandate and autonomous vehicles, I think that's really the trend. And I think it's a good trend.
Oh, I agree. And on our end, it's simply going to be more trucks on the road. So those of us in the business of preparing these things and working with them, I mean, you know, we need to start hiring some kids who understand LIDAR systems and things like that. But I mean, I think that there's going to be, you know, even more demand, you know, on our end. I mean, it's going to not affect us much at all. If anything positive, I believe it's, you know, that there's going to be a need for way more trucks on the road. So that's, it's, you know, not a big deal for us at all.
Then one other thing on that topic, and then I have one more topic. At the other end of the spectrum, so we have Embark, who's really focusing on this hub-to-hub autonomous, which makes a lot of sense. The other big push I'm starting to see, though, are these last-mile delivery vans. That seems to be a big thing right now. A lot of companies are coming out, companies I haven't even heard of, and they already have vehicles. They've got these funky-looking... you know, kind of container on wheels things. And their whole push is they're going to do that last mile delivery with a fully autonomous vehicle. I mean, these things aren't even designed like a truck or a van. They're not designed to have a human in them at all.
That's interesting. I was in Austin, Texas over the weekend, and there are a ton of those little pod type cabs running around everywhere. They weren't autonomous. Right? I didn't see any autonomous ones, but they were the little square boxes, basically. You could fit, you know, six or nine people in, and they're tiny and they're all electric. And they, if, you know, I didn't see one that was autonomous, but that doesn't mean there weren't any that were there. But they were all over the streets there in Austin. It was really interesting.
Yeah, that last mile, you know, with an autonomous delivery vehicle, that's just basically high cube, just designed to move freight around. That seems to be the other push, which, again, is kind of interesting. I don't see that having any impact on our listeners. I mean, it'll have an impact, but I don't see a negative impact. That's not the kind of freight they move anyway. So...
Right.
Really, I think all the news around autonomous right now is looking better and better all the time for drivers. The other thing I saw, and John, you and I talked about this. This was just the logical thing, and now it's official. The companies that are ordering Tesla's truck, they're all working with Tesla now to put in all their own charging stations. I mean, that was just logical. They weren't saying it, but you and I talked about it. But now it's official. UPS, Pepsi, I forget the other one. Oh, Anheuser-Busch, I think. They're all, you know, Tesla is already working to build out charging stations in their locations. That makes total sense.
Oh, and which to me, that's the biggest profit. I think that's going to be the biggest profit center in Tesla's business plan is going to be the charging stations and infrastructure. Like I said, as soon as he gets blown out of the water by everybody else, that's all going to be in place, and that's going to be his work, and that's where they're going to profit, I believe.
Yeah, and if we look at that model, that's good for drivers too. I'll tell you the biggest pain in the ass for me when I'm on the road, whether it was before in the truck or now, I'm actually leaving in the coach. I'll probably be gone a month. I'm heading down to Texas. I have a couple speaking engagements, and it's just easier for me to travel in the coach. I hate getting fuel. Absolutely hate it. It's one of the worst things about being on the road. And now when you look at this model, you know, the drivers for these companies won't ever fuel their truck. You know, they'll just drive. When they get to a location, it'll get plugged in and they'll go do their thing and they come back to a fully charged truck and off they go. I mean, I think that's another positive.
Yep. No,
Kevin, I don't have trouble buying fuel.
You didn't say you don't have it. Like doing it.
No, I just don't like doing it. But I'll tell you what's changed, Bruce. You know, people will tell me all the time, oh, you're out of touch. You haven't been on the road in a long time. Well, it wasn't that long ago that I was driving a truck, and I'm still on the road, and I still hit truck stops, and I still do virtually all the same things in a very large, heavy vehicle. But let me tell you what's changed. And most things haven't really changed. But I'll tell you one thing that has changed. And it's one of the things that makes me crazy about getting fuel today. We'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford, the number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. This is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan and John with me. So here's one thing that has changed somewhat, Bruce. For the most part, driving a truck is just like it was 30 years ago. You've got traffic and miles and all those things. But I don't know what causes this, but it's also probably the biggest complaint you see on Facebook. I see this all the time. The way the truck stop should work is, you know, they've got all the pumps. You pull in, sometimes it's two or three deep waiting to get to a pump. It is shocking how many people, you should pump your fuel, move up. They have a line that tells you exactly how far to move up, park so you can walk in and finish your paperwork. It's surprising how many people don't understand that or are just too rude. They leave their truck at the pump. Whereas if they would just pull up, then the next truck can start fueling at least, because it takes a while. Or they'll pull up and they'll leave it there, go have lunch, take a shower, a nap, who knows what. And now you're stuck behind them. You've got your fuel, you've paid for it, and you can't get out. It is unbelievable how often that happens.
I recently climbed into a vehicle, a car, to move it forward, and there was a lady sitting in the back seat. And I said to her, I said, whoever's driving this needs to learn how to move their vehicle when they're done pumping their gasoline.
Right.
And and when the owner came out, they didn't say anything to me. And it was a foreigner, but that had nothing to do with it. But I understand that. If you go into the Flying J RV Island at nighttime, usually you don't have any problems. Usually there's no one there.
Yeah, and I do that a lot because I try to stay out of the fuel islands anyway as much as possible, because then I'm just one more vehicle there somebody has to wait for. So if I can hit an RV, you know, one of the problems, and I wish Flying J would fix this, is that their stupid RV pumps still kick off at $75. It takes me 400 to fill up the coach. I have to restart that thing 3 and 4 times. It's just stupid. So
send them a letter.
That's my rant for today. I know. That's my rant for today. I normally don't complain, but today I'm complaining.
All right. I got a couple of things I need to talk about.
All right.
Our second snowmobile conference. We're moving it back a weekend. It's going to be March 1st, 2nd. We will arrive at the Line Shack Lodge in Dubois, Wyoming, and ride Togedy Mountain. The phone number for the Line Shack Lodge is 307-455-3232. $75 per person per night. And they do have a restaurant. Now, in Dubois, there are about 10 motels, and you might be able to find a place to stay more economical, and that's okay. But we arrive on Thursday the 1st, and we leave on either you can leave Sunday evening or Monday morning. Most of us stick around and depart Monday morning. And the our last conference, we're going to be at the Line Shack Lodge in Dubois, Wyoming, which is at the bottom of the mountain. So it's just over one mountain from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So if you were to fly in, you would fly into Jackson Hole.
I was just, you know, Bruce, this was the first one I was going to go to, but now I can't because you moved it.
Well, we didn't move it. We didn't move it. The first one we had to move because why our Utah has no snow. Utah and Colorado are very, very light on snow this year. So, and I also wanted to mention that, Lamar Cohen turbocharged his Polaris, and my hat's off to him. I didn't know he was as mechanically inclined as he is. He did it in Mike Lane's trailer in 38-degree temperature in Ogden, Utah, in the dark. Now, we had flashlights, but he did it, and it's working. I paid to have my turbo put on my Skidoo, and all I can say is, wow, 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. Is fast, and it did get me into trouble a couple times. It got me about 4 times places where I shouldn't have been, because there is just no stopping a turbocharged snowmobile, and we're only using 6 pounds of turbo boost. That's how powerful air being injected into a gasoline engine is.
Well, you know, Bruce, I was just looking at the map. And I, you know, I'm not going to make any promises, but I'll be heading back from Fort Worth around that time. Normally, I go up through Utah because I love going through Moab, but it's not that far out of the way to go up through Colorado instead. And it's not that far off 80, although I'd have to backtrack back to 80 when I left there, because getting out of there through the passes this time of year is never any fun.
Sorry, coming back to 80 is not a big deal. You could follow us.
No, it doesn't look like it's that far.
All right. So think about it. You would enjoy it.
I'll take a look. I don't have my whole schedule worked out, but I've got like 2 speaking engagements while I'm out on the road. So maybe. We'll see. What else you got?
Well, good. The other thing is... I'm seeing the 5EK Cats, the 95, 96s, and 97s. The engines you can buy pretty cheap now, like $3,500. And you can build those and put in your glider kit and eliminate the ELDs because they're prior to the 99. And I have a friend that's doing that. He just bought 2 5EKs, and he's ordering a new W9 glider today. It's something to think about, and the 5EK had a reputation of breaking the crankshaft. It wasn't the crankshaft, it wasn't the engine, it was the fact that people don't want to change the torsional damper on the front of the cranks. I was in Blackfoot, Idaho a week ago, Monday and Tuesday, and working with a fellow on his Caterpillar. And he makes videos, and it's called Jay Pay Dirt. He has old Caterpillar equipment. He makes a living with 50-year-old cat dozers and graders. And what do you call the one where you drop the pan down and fix the dirt up? What's that machine called?
Pan?
A shovel? Yeah, he's got some of those, and he makes videos showing that. But I was riding in one of his Acer cats, and I said, do you feel, Jay, Jeff, do you feel that noise down in there? He said, yeah, I thought maybe that was in my drivetrain. I said, no, that's your torsional damper on the front of the crank. So we sent him one, and we'll know within another week if that fixes that. But back to the 5EK. Those are great engines, 5EK, 1LW, 7CZ. Those are all good engines. I know everybody's looking for the 6NZ, but those old 40-pin ECM CAT engines run very well. You do our manifold and turbo damper and balancer and either the power box or the ECM programming, and there's never a complaint on fuel mileage, reliability, or power. Ethan, you've had pretty good success with those, haven't you?
Yeah, they're a good running engine.
Yeah. So just something for people to think about that want to stay away from the ELDs.
All right.
That is all that I have.
All right. Well, that's all we need right now, because I'm going to take us into a break. And when we come back from this break, we're going to get right to your calls and questions. If you don't have our app yet, get it. It's the Audio Road app. It does one thing, and it does it really well. We kept this nice and simple. You download the app. It's free. You open it up. You can listen to all our shows. That's what it does, and it does it really clean and easy. You don't have to fight around with podcast apps and subscribe to things. Open up the app. All of our shows will be there. The Power Hour, Destination Health, the weekend live shows. You can listen to us live. You can listen to us while we're recording, or you can listen to any show anytime. I think we have almost 7 years worth of shows loaded into the app. So pick it up. Here's the easiest way to find it. Go to Google, do a Google search for Audio Road app. Audio Road is one word, AUDIORoad. The first two links that will come up, the first one is for Android. The second one is your iPhone link. It's free. Download it and start listening on the app. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come right back and get to your calls and questions. This is the Power Hour. Bruce, John, and Ethan are here to answer your questions. We'll do that right after this. Kevin Brown. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I said we were going to get to your calls, but I just happened to be reading something during the break, and I'm going to talk about that for just a second, and then we will get to your calls. John, you and I have talked about this, the whole, whether it was the ELDs or autonomous trucks or, the fear that vehicles are going to get hacked. And, you know, with ELDs, it's just a joke. Why would anybody hack an ELD anyway? And there's not much else they can do with it. But with autonomous vehicles, it has been a concern. You know, I'm not saying it's not a problem, but it's not going to stop autonomous technology. We'll figure it out. Well, there's a company called Trillium, and they recently developed this new security software for not just autonomous cars, but the Internet of Everything. You know, because we're connecting our refrigerators to the Internet and our door locks, and, you know, we're connecting everything, and it all has a potential to be hacked. But this company has developed some technology, and they took it to that. Have you ever watched that hackers convention they do every year?
No, I haven't. No, I've not watched that. Just to see if you could hack things, like,
they,
you know, start someone else's Jeep with your phone. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Super Bowl of hacking. I mean, they bring in, you know, all the good guys, the white hat guys that work in security, but they also bring in kind of what they call the gray hat guys, you know, that are on the fringe and do, you know how to hack in for criminal purposes. And it's like a big challenge. And they took their technology and nobody could break it.
Oh, wow. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to see.
Yeah,
I get to
nobody...
see the heist movie now. You know, like the Italian Job, but with just hacking into the autonomous trucks and
that's
moving
right.
them somewhere that they aren't
that's
supposed
right.
to go. And yeah, yep.
Yeah, yeah, and then hacking some security system at some building and sending a robot in to steal things, and all the while
you
sit
yeah.
at home.
Yeah, just like all the new movie potential. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, so as promised, let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Indiana. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Great show as always. Well, you guys are just knocking out of the park. Every week, my two favorite hours in radio are Destination Health and the Power Hour. You guys do a great job, so I sure do appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, there should be a disclaimer, Kevin, when you talk about the autonomous trucks. There was a gentleman on XM last year saying that he works with Bosch as a systems engineer. He had said that no one driving a truck professionally today is going to have to worry about losing their job. And it seems like every few months you have to move that up. You know, it seems like now guys my age in their 40s might not have to worry about losing their job to an autonomous truck. But if you're in your 20s or 30s, you might want to start looking into perhaps doing diesel mechanics and repair, because I've been hearing that the shortage of diesel techs is just going to be huge in the next few years. They're saying that there's going to be a need for over 100,000 new diesel techs, and basically the wait times are going to be so long that it's almost going to bring the industry to a halt if they don't do something about it, and I believe it.
You know,
that's a problem.
I'm always
now.
Shocked. Oh, go ahead, John.
Oh, that's just the problem now. We really struggle to find anybody. It's very difficult.
Yeah, they're saying the wait times are going to be unbearable. I mean, right now, if you go to Freightliner or Kenworth, they're like, yeah, we can help you. It'll be 2 weeks out. You know, if you're an owner-operator making a truck payment, that's unacceptable. You know, so for me personally, I've turned to a lot of the independent shops, and I still wish we had a Pittsburgh Power South. Maybe that's hopefully coming in the future. But if you guys can get one down near Georgia or the Carolinas, boy, that would be a hit.
That would be awesome. Yep.
Really,
you know,
good.
I'll tell you that seems to be across the board in mechanics and technicians. If I call to get anything, not even major, just, you know, almost anything done on the coach anymore, they're a month out. It's incredible how hard it is to get something in to get it worked on anymore. So, yeah, I want to make a comment about whoever that guy was from Bosch or wherever. Just in general, making predictions, he was basically making predictions 40 years out. Because if he's saying anybody driving a truck today, I started at 22. So that's a potential 40-year career driving. And for him to make a prediction 40 years out is just ignorant. I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen in 40 years. We have a hard time picturing what's going to happen in 4, honestly. So I think, you know, even the best people that do predict the future, I'm actually reading a good book by a guy that has been predicting trends before they really happen, and he's been doing it for about 6 or 7 years right now, and he's really good at it. But he's only predicting 1 year ahead because he said things change way too much. You can't possibly know what's going to happen in 10 years, much less 40.
I say bring on the autopilot because I'm heading down to Nashville today. I can use a nap, so I'd be happy with that. And actually, my home state of Georgia, I'm from North Atlanta. My home state of Georgia actually just released plans to build the first ever toll-free truck highway. It's going to go from McDonough, Georgia, which is about 20 miles south of Atlanta, down to Macon. It's going to be a 40-mile stretch. It's truck only. They say it's going to reduce the traffic on 75 north there, the main highway, by about 40%. But the main goal of it is to test self-driving trucks and platooning. It's going to be about $1.8 billion project. So that's set to begin in construction in 2025. That should definitely help with traffic down that way and should be pretty exciting. And I did have a question about my truck, though, guys. So what would your comments be about that truck-only highway, Kevin?
Yeah, I see that coming. I see, you know, they've talked about other freight corridors. Texas has proposed this a couple times, where they separate all kinds of commercial traffic from the interstate system, where we might have high-speed trains, you might have autonomous lanes, platooning lanes. I think that's probably the future, that we will start separating transportation like that.
That's cool. Well, anyway, I do have questions. 2017 Kenworth T660 kit. It's just Cheryl Glider kits, build Series 60 12-7 Detroit. I got all the Pittsburgh Power goodies, the muffler, the balancer and dampener. I got my fast fuel system, fleet air filter. And I went ahead, when I ordered the truck, the guys at MHC in Charlotte forgot to order me my 20th gauge. It left me a blank spot on the dash. And I'm actually thankful now, because I'm going to put the EGT gauge in. Of course, I got the boost gauge in the dash here. This has the full gauge suite. I've heard conflicting stories about where to put it. Nice to be into tuner cars. I've got an old 95 Eagle Talon all-wheel drive. We used to put the EGT gauge prong, or the probe for it, three-cylinder, on the exhaust header. Now, I talked to Indianapolis, they told me that they've always seen them on a factory equipped truck with the EGT prong on the downpipe. So I just wanted to hear it straight from the horse's mouth. And then after this, I have one more technical question about my truck.
All right. I'm going to take this one.
Okay.
This is a 41-year-old question. And the ignorance in the industry is put it in the exhaust pipe in case the tip burns off. Well, we use the Hewitt pyrometer, and they're made in Southern California. I'm trying to think, Huntington Beach. We have never in 41 years deviated from the Hewitt pyrometer and the Hewitt thermocouple. We've never had one burn off. Years ago, Mr. Hewitt, and I'm sure he's passed away by now, walked by my engine display at a truck show. He said, "Here's a man that knows where to put the thermocouple." And I looked at him. I didn't know who he was. I said, "In the hot side." And he said, "That's right." And then he introduced himself. And I shook his hand. And then we became friends. And I've been to his plant several times in California. But you have a 300-degree drop on average when you're working the truck once the exhaust goes through the turbo. The difference is when you're pulling a long grade, and if your heat's getting up there, say 1300-1400 degrees, and you just back your foot out of that throttle about an eighth of an inch, you'll see that temperature come down when that thermocouple's in the manifold. When that thermocouple's in that exhaust pipe and you have that turbine housing cherry red, it's recording the heat off the turbine housing and not necessarily coming off the engine. And if you had the privilege to go and spend time at Cummins, and whether it be Cat, Mac, Detroit, but spend time with the engineers. Mine was with the Cummins engineers. They put a thermocouple in each cylinder.
Oh, wow.
So they want them in the hot side.
Good. Okay.
By the way, if you ever buy a used engine and you see a hole, a threaded hole with a plug-in above each cylinder, you'll know that was a test engine at one of the engine manufacturers, because we've had those.
You know, Kevin, can you hold me over? I got another question real quick, buddy.
Yep, hold that thought. We're going to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right back to your calls and questions. We're talking with Mike in Indiana. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, Kevin. I sure appreciate it. Okay, Bruce, so this Series 60, where would you suggest, which cylinder would you suggest putting that probe on, sir?
In front of number four.
Number four. Okay, sounds good. Now, this is Park Power, just out of curiosity. The company I'm leased to runs the E-Logs. I don't really care about it. I don't run more than 550 miles in a day. I call just for find out. It turns out I've got a 93 motor in here. It was built in December of 93, put in service of April of 94. Now, this is a D-Deck 2, correct?
No. Oh, no. 94. Wow. Is the ECM about 3 inches
thick? Yes, sir.
Thick?
You know what? I haven't even taken a look. I've been looking at some the anti-theft kits for the ECM. I heard they're a real hot ticket item for thieves, so I haven't even got really taken a look at it. But I figured it was a D-Deck 2. Is there any kind of advantage to upgrade that to a 3?
Even if it was a D-Deck 2, they would have built it to a D-Deck 4.
Yeah, we would have been repowered.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm sure that, there's no way that Fitzgerald would have built a new engine with D-Deck 2 electronics on it. So.
No, the block might have been at one
time. Right, which is no big deal.
Well, wait, he didn't say it was Fitzgerald.
Good.
Who built the glider?
I thought he did.
Yeah, it's a Fitzgerald glider kit. I had it custom ordered.
Yeah.
And.
Yep.
Okay, so it's D-Deck 4, definitely. Okay, sounds good. Now, what kind of programming do you guys do to these? I know they use your programming like a tune.
Hold on. It's a D-Deck 4 ECM. We're not saying it's a D-Deck 4 block.
Right.
Okay. It's a D-Deck 4
electronics. Well, the conversion would be to 4. They wouldn't have bothered with 3 electronics. It would have been 4.
It would be 4 electronics, but would it have the 3 connecting rod?
Oh, I don't know. I see a lot of their stuff comes through here as the 3 connecting rod still.
Okay.
All right. We've got lots of questions, so we're going to move on, try to get to some here. Let's go to Massachusetts. Jim, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I got a comment about your Fleet Air filters. When I was cleaning my filter, I had noticed that the wire mesh underneath the foam coverings was starting to deteriorate. Each time, a little more. And eventually, the last time that I got into it, the wire mesh did basically rotted out at the bottom. Taking a chance, I called Fleet Air Filters, and some of the nicest people I've ever talked to, they actually said they've run into this before up in some of the northern states. And they were working on the problem to fix it and make it out of a different material. But in the meantime, they're going to send me another one just like I have. And when the new ones come out, they're going to send the newer one out and stand behind their product. I just have to say it's a great company, and you can't ask for any more than that.
That's correct. Fantastic. They are a great company.
Yeah, we love
that's
that.
That's one of my favorite
and those are the
products.
Those are the kind of companies we like to partner with. Guys, let me give you another story that goes even beyond that. That's awesome customer service. I've seen them replace things, without any questions. OPS, I love this story. OPS, a lot of guys will buy these parts and then they never get around to putting them on. So they sit in their garage, and the guy called OPS and he said, hey, he says, I need to buy another unit. He said, I bought one 2 years ago, never put it on. It was in my garage. We moved and now I can't find it. They sent him another one without charging him. That's crazy.
That's good.
But that's and don't everybody call OPS and say you lost your filter and think you're going to get a free one. But it was, an interesting story. So just
Kevin,
Fleet Air Filter,
Kevin,
you guys have,
If we program your ECM and you go into a truck dealership and they wipe it out, we reprogram it at no charge.
Well, and like I say, that's why we partner with the companies we do, because that's the kind of customer service we expect. Let's we can get in another call or two. Let's go to Texas. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good. Hello? How are you?
doing well. I got a 2015 389 Pete with an ISX. You guys did the tune on it March of last year. But I'm having starter problems. I've been through three sets of batteries in 3 years. And last week we determined that maybe the starter was dragging, because when you hit the key, it just goes dead. Everything goes blank. And so we put a new starter on it this weekend. It's got a PACCAR starter on it. And they had one, the company I'm leased to had one on the shelf. But not sure that this makes a difference, but it was 2.5 years old. They've traded all their PACCAR equipment off and went to Freightliner. So we put it on, and now when you hit the key, the solenoid clicks twice before it engages the starter motor. Am I barking up the wrong tree thinking, I mean, now when the motor does kick on, it seems to start easier than it did. But I'm almost afraid to shut this thing off now that I've started it this week, that maybe I got another bad starter.
But it clicks twice. That's odd.
You can get a bad starter. I just actually had that exact problem on a car where we replaced one, and it lasted all of 2 days, and that was the end of that one.
As far as your battery consumption goes, make sure this thing's not overcharging a little bit. You could be roasting those. Check your voltage with a voltmeter.
Yeah, directly off of the alternator there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, make sure you're not boiling the batteries.
Volts are always showing right at about 14, and it never.
Okay.
Now, like when it started this morning, it did go up to 75 amp. And most times when it will come to zero. It hadn't yet today. It's still putting out about 25 amp. And we did put a new set of batteries in it again this weekend when we put the starter on it. The other one's low tested marginal. They weren't bad, but they weren't great.
Mm-hmm. I would seriously take a voltmeter and explore it. If it's a smart sense, it might be showing a different voltage at the battery than at the alternator. So check the voltage at the battery themselves with the voltmeter.
Okay.
And also check it at the back of the alternator and see if that coincides with what your dash is telling you. Because the dash is just getting a reading from the computer. So that's not a real voltmeter. It's data coming from the computer telling it what it is. I would actually put a voltmeter on and just make sure you're not overcharging a little bit. Make sure those things aren't running up around, 14 and a half or 15, in which case you're going to end up boiling the water out and doing some damage to them.
Got it. And then obviously I kept the old starter. So would you consider swapping solenoids?
Maybe.
Between the two starters?
I try to diagnose where the double click's coming from. Is that if it has a over temp on it, that's a separate little solenoid, isn't it? Is that like a little relay?
No, it's just
a little igniter. Or
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I diagnose that farther. Make sure the click's coming, double clicking from the solenoid itself on the starter before you change it. Just try changing the solenoid.
Got it. Just kind of makes you nervous to shut them off. You got an APU,
yep.
But we've become so reliant on these APUs to charge batteries, and we shouldn't.
Right.
Because we ran years without APUs, so you shouldn't be relying on an APU to keep your batteries up.
Right. I agree.
I'll tell you my solution to this, because we're just about out of time. I really like the Maxwell Start module. And then even worst case scenario, the batteries go dead, the start module gets drained. One of those little pocket jumpers you can buy for like 60 or 70 bucks now at Costco will start the truck right up.
That
yeah,
is
we've
hard
got
to
one,
believe.
Everybody. Yeah, no, we've that, got one of those here that we bought on that we bought from
Amazon.
It's terrific as long as you keep it charged.
Yeah, it only really works with a full charge, but it will start
it'll take a dead stone dead truck and start it. It's pretty amazing.
Even without a Maxwell?
That big of an object.
Even without a Maxwell, with nothing, with four dead batteries.
Wow.
You hook this thing on, do it, and
that's
hit the button
impressive.
And it goes.
Yeah, that's impressive.
I didn't believe it at first.
With the with the Maxwell, it doesn't take hardly anything to fully charge the Maxwell. That's why the little pocket jump starters work. I mean, it's in seconds on that. And usually, even if your other batteries are dead, all you need to do is get them enough voltage, you know, to get the ECM fired up. So with the Maxwell in one of those pocket jump starters, it's a breeze. I didn't know one would do a truck with four dead truck batteries. Interesting. All right. We're going to have to wrap it up today. We'll do it again real soon. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. Master the journey. Kevin Thompson. We are going to do a second hour, so here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rothford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. Today is the Power Hour. I've got Bruce and Ethan and John here with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to jump right into questions today. We've got a lot of calls on hold, so we're just going to get right to it today. We're going to start off in Arizona. John, welcome to the program.
Yes, how y'all doing today?
Good. What's on your mind? How's it going?
A couple of questions. All right. I got a couple of questions. First one for Kevin, another one is for Pittsburgh Power folks. On algae in the tank, what's the name of that stuff? I remember you saying something before about a product put out where you put
algae or asphaltene?
Algae.
Algae,
yeah,
is Killam.
It's
Killam is what we use. It's called Killam.
Killam?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have a particular product. What I normally do is I just go to a West Marine because they deal with so much more algae in the marine world. I just go to West Marine and ask them for their best algicide.
Because I had a... I don't really know if it's actually algae, but the technician said, oh, you got to change these water fuel separators because they get algae in there. You have to change them every couple of weeks, which I've been doing this a long time, never heard of. But
well,
anyway,
the way you can tell if it's algae is dump the fuel from the filter into a clear jar, and if you see little black specks, that's the waste of the algae. Algae is actually alive and it eats, and that's its waste. So the black specks are the algae. And if you can see in your tanks and you see something that looks like mucus, that's the actual algae.
Okay. All righty. Well, my other question now was on my motor. I got a 2013 ISX. It's rated 450. Y'all did a tune on it for me and got it turned up to, I think you did 514 or 515 on the dyno. Now, I got right at 700,000 on it now. If I was to rebuild it, bring it up there and have y'all rebuild it, would y'all be able to boost up the horsepower in it? Or would it still be at that, like 515 or whatever?
At 515 to the ground's about 615 flywheel. No, we can take it higher.
Can we build it back to a better CPL?
Yeah, we change the CPL, yeah. Yep.
What about if you build it to the 3939 CPL?
Yeah,
that's the one, right?
Even when you when you did the tune or whatever. You said you wrote a new program, and you was happy to get it to 514. So I didn't know if, you know, a rebuild would go in and change all the mechanicals, you know, putting new mechanicals, if we could go up higher or what.
Oh, absolutely on that.
All righty. Well, I'll be trying to get up there in the next couple.
Before you hang up, Ethan, on the CPL 3939, what are we seeing to the ground on average?
Oh, we can easily get a 6.25 to the wheels with those, up to 650 at the wheels.
Wow.
So add another 125 onto that. Well, I'll tell you, let me do a calculation here. If it's, you said 625 to the ground, Ethan?
Yes.
It gives you 735 flywheel. Would
yeah,
that be enough?
Good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
That'll pull that big bunk of yours around nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. All right, we've we're going to move along. We've got a lot of questions to get to. We're going to go to Pennsylvania this time. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, you guys. I've been dealing with a problem for about a year and a half. John's aware of it. It's ever since I had injectors pulled out to do O-rings, I lost all kinds of power and boost, and I've been chasing it for a while here. And I did get a hold of a test ECM for free, thankfully.
Oh, good.
Unfortunately, that has not cured the problem, so I'm still kind of
okay
stuck here.
Which engine?
It's C12. I you saw it, Bruce. I showed it to you a couple weeks ago when I was out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we just had it here in the shop, Bruce, the C12. We put the manifold turbo in.
Yeah.
Put a tune on it, and we had it running pretty good when it left, I thought, but he's got an intermittent problem. It'll throw out some white smoke, much like that one we had with the big bunk that the ECM ended up curing. But that, obviously that didn't work with this one. So,
yeah, the tune's great.
Wow.
It's been flawless, and the turbo
okay.
and manifold, but, yeah, still, of course, this has a stock tune on it, so we're in a back in my old range, kind of 20 to 30 pounds on every pull. It
okay.
kind of does what it wants to. Sometimes it actually pulls back a little bit, so I'm still wondering if there's any possibility of fuel restriction, even though our gauges are good.
That
I don't
was
know,
my thought.
Or if you think it's electronic.
Yeah.
Does it have a?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think we put gauges on it when we dynoed that. It didn't act up for us though either. It ran great on the dyno. Maybe we just need to run it longer with the restriction gauge.
And what did we have to the ground on that engine?
What was it?
478. 478. Yeah, right around 480. We got to just about 480 with what we did with it.
Yeah, and I had you guys put the pressure and restriction gauges in, so I have them on
board. Oh, we did.
Board.
Oh, yeah, oh, you do have
yeah.
them. Okay, I forgot about that. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Do you see anything there at yeah. all whenever it acts up?
No, not really. I'm trying to watch. Sometimes the fuel pressure dips down to about 70, but, I mean, it's pretty steady.
Okay. Yeah, that's plenty for that engine.
No, are we taking the fuel pressure off?
Go ahead.
Off the front or the
back
of the
head?
I want to make sure we're taking that off the back of the head, because we've seen that where the front will read 70, but it's not actually 70 in the head, you know, through the whole rail.
How many miles are on the injectors?
They're new.
Yeah, we did those a couple months ago. That did, my old injectors were tired. The old ones, I was only getting 21 pounds of boost, and these are a little bit bigger. They're 5% bigger, and I got a lot of power back, but but the boost wasn't consistent. Sometimes it would be 21, sometimes 27, sometimes 25. And before this whole problem started, I was getting, I was really stock strong at like 28, you know, on a good night I could get 30. And this all started when I had injectors out to do O-rings, which is kind of, I keep coming back to that, wondering what could have possibly changed.
What if a piece of an O-ring ended up in the return valve and maybe it doesn't have enough pressure? We're looking at 70 on the way into the head. I wonder what it is on the backside.
Yeah, because 70 should be the minimum on the back.
Yeah. But that wouldn't be intermittent, though. Yeah, I need to think about this some more. So, Brian,
yeah,
did
you're
that,
going
did
up through
up
the gears.
Did someone else have it?
No, somebody else, the small-time shop, okay. Salvage yard. Yeah. But, yeah, if
one,
you
okay,
go up
you
through
try.
The gears, yeah, if you go up through the gears, every gear, you could get a different boost reading. You know, as you swing through the range, seventh gear you might get 30, and eighth gear you might only get 20, and then ninth gear you might get 25.
Okay.
Is it the original fuel suction line?
I believe so.
I think I'd be replacing that. I'd be starting from the tank and working my way forward. Because that's just not... This is a... We've never had a C12 with a problem like this, so...
Yeah, that's a great one.
I'd be looking at the fuel delivery side.
There's the music. We've got to get to a break. We're going to come back and get to more of your calls and questions right after this. Don't go away. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin. Website is letstruck.com. This is the Power Hour. Bruce and John and Ethan are here with me. We're taking your calls and answering your questions. We're going to get back to the calls right now. We're off to Texas. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hello. Got a real quick question. Got a chance to buy a 99 Freightliner. Pretty cheap, I think. But it's got an auto stick in it. Is that something that I should stay away from or not?
A 99 with an auto shift? Is that what you said?
Yes. Yes.
That may have been either the... Is it a full auto shift or what they call a top two?
That's full auto.
Yeah, I think the top two came out in 97 or 98. 99 might actually be the very first year of the auto shift. Depends on a lot of other reasons. I don't know that I would eliminate it just because of that, but I'd look at a lot of other things, and that would be a factor. I had an auto shift in 01 that I had a lot of luck with. It was an Eaton, so that would have been, I think, the same generation, and then I had the Meritor in 05, which was a disaster.
Yeah, I don't know if that would eliminate it, but it's a factor. It is the earliest generation of that transmission.
The truck's in pretty good condition, and it's been used on the farm, light work, but he wants about $7,000 for it.
Yeah, you know, at $7,000, if I liked the truck and it was low mileage and in good shape, I wouldn't worry about the transmission.
Well, I think it's got $1.3 million on it, but it was overhauled right after $1 million. So the engine's...
Is it a 12.7?
I think it is.
Check the paperwork and make sure they put a bull gear in it.
Okay. Okay, but is that about the right price for that truck, or...?
Yes.
Yeah, That's pretty hard to go wrong. They spent double that on the in-frame, at least, maybe even three times that on the in-frame alone. And you've only got a couple of 100,000 miles on it. So pretty hard to go wrong at $7,000 with a fairly recent in-frame.
That's what I thought. And I was going to put it to work hauling local back and forth about 45 miles. And I think it'd be perfect for that, you know, short trips local. And run it for, you know, several years and then, you know, trade it or sell it or something after that, but get some money out of it. It'd pay for itself pretty quick, I think. And
oh,
I know the guy
that's an ideal operation.
Yeah. Okay.
Make sure, take a look at the damper, the torsional damper. I'll bet it's the old rusty original one, and call us up and put a new damper and balancer on it. That would be the first thing I would do to it.
Yeah, that's top of the list from listening to you guys. That's what I would do.
Okay.
But anything this guy says, I can trust because he's a pretty good guy, and I know him. I've known him for years. So.
Good.
Anyhow, that's just my thought. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Let's go to Oklahoma. Paul, welcome to the program.
Isn't Elon Musk sending his Tesla into space today? Has he launched it yet?
No, it got delayed now till 3:45 p.m.
We had the computer fired up here so we could watch, and he's letting us down.
Because I was talking to a guy the other day, and he says, "Well, why would he send a Tesla out of space?" And I said, "Because he can."
You mean it's. It's been delayed. You mean Elon failed again, that slacker?
Oh, he's terrible, isn't he? He's terrible.
He can't control the weather, though. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Why not?
Hey, he ain't. Well, he can control electricity, so maybe he can control the weather eventually. Yeah. The other day, not on a power hour show, but. You know the guy called in about the ELDs and recording the engine hours? Well, when the Tesla electric truck comes out, are they going to want to record the engine hours on the electric motor too? I don't think so. What's the point of that?
Say that again?
I'm sure it will.
You know, the ELD, it records the engine hours. Well, when the Tesla comes out with his electric truck, will they still want to record the engine hours for the electric motors?
You know, we had this conversation over the weekend. Somebody called me and they read all the way through the ELD mandate. Because I kept asking the question, why did we even have the 99 exemption? Because clearly you can do this with a mechanical engine if you wanted to. Well, one of the requirements was that the ELD captures engine hours. And I thought, what for? Nobody's ever going to use that data for anything. So, you know, it's just like the government to complicate things. Why do we stick that in there? And they, you know, it needed to know when the key was on and when the engine started, which again, why? Has nothing to do with hours of service, doesn't tell us one useful piece of information. But honestly, if they wanted to, with sensors today, how hard would it be to create a standalone device that knew when the engine was running? I don't think that would be that difficult either.
Yeah, well, or if it just reads from the ECM. The info's in the ECM, it knows. I mean, they could just read it.
Yeah, but that's why they claim that they have the 99 exemption, because, you know, the farther back we go, the more rudimentary the ECMs were. But I have to believe even the earliest ECMs would be able to give you that information.
Yeah, well,
right.
Even the N14 has it.
Yeah, everything has it. Yeah, yeah, that's bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that when the electric trucks come out and they say, oh, well, if we can do it for an electric truck, we can probably just do it for a 99 or older. So when the electric trucks come out is when the 99 exemption will go away, I'm guessing.
If it makes
it that long. Exactly. I'm not even sure why it exists, honestly.
Yeah. And then my old truck that had the 7CZ engine, that was the best performing engine I've ever sat behind. I'd buy another one of them in a heartbeat.
I've always said, anytime somebody calls with a Caterpillar with a 40-pin ECM, 7CZ, 1LW, 5EK, and they buy our ported and ceramic-coated manifold and HP Cat Turbo and Firebox or ECM programming and a damper and a balancer, I know within a week they're going to be calling me and telling me how wonderful their truck is. So those old cats from 95 through 98 were really good engines. They're just not getting the notoriety of the 6NZ.
We're going to squeeze in another call here. We may have to carry it through the break. Jim in Massachusetts, it's your turn.
Yeah, I had to comment about the fleet air cleaner, but I had another question for you on the ceramic manifolds. I have a C15, and we're having issues of breaking exhaust manifold posts. We noticed that the exhaust manifold, the back half, the three sections, was separating a little bit. And you can't push that back together. I guess it's a press fit. And the manufacturer of the manifold doesn't really seem to want to do anything about that. We have a real good company with the fleet air filters, but yet the manifold people on a part that shouldn't wear out don't really want to seem to do anything on something that's obviously a manufacturing fault, because that's not supposed to separate like that. And what it's doing is putting lateral pressure on the exhaust manifold bolts and breaking them. Have you ever run into this
before? No, we have not. And how hot is your pyrometer running?
It's never seen anything above 1250 tops.
And is that on the hot side?
That's on the hot side. It's never gotten hot.
What kind of test is this in?
It's in a Western Star.
In a Western Star with a Caterpillar.
C15. C15 and C15,
Is it an A-cert? Is it an A-cert?
No, 6NZ.
6NZ.
Yep.
Wow.
6NZ, and you can actually see where it's pushed back a good eighth of an inch. It kind of leaves like a rust line where originally it started.
Those manifolds have almost been 100% perfect. Call us or email us with your name and phone number, and let me look at this for you.
All right, we've got to get to a break. We'll be right back for stuff. Stick around. We got problems. All right, everybody, we had one segment left, I think, but we are out of questions. and I've got a lot of work to do. I've got to get on the road for about a month-long road trip. So we're going to wrap this up today. Thanks for joining us. We will... I think the schedule is going to change for Destination Health tomorrow because I have to fill in on Free Wheeling for 3 hours. I think we're going to push